I don't know why, but I thought it was going to be warmer today than it was yesterday. And man, am I wrong. High's today of 55. Right now it's 40. And then we kind of get on a roller coaster. I wouldn't get the car washed unless you belong to the wash it as many times as you want club. And I'm thinking about that, but that's neither here or there. 60% chance for showers tomorrow, 45% on Thursday, 40% Friday, Saturday. Looking really wet. The temperatures rise to Saturday up until 70 degrees, up to 70 degrees. And then Sunday, cold front comes through, 57 for a high. Sunday, 43 for a high on Monday. But hang on, next Tuesday, the high is going to be 33 degrees. The low is going to be 24, so that means freeze precautions. More on that as we get closer and they narrow that forecast down. So how do you get your news? Where do you get your news? What do you know what to believe? Do you care what's true and what's not? Or do you just seek out what you want to know, what you want to be true? Jesse Holcomb joins us now, professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University, also a former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center. Good morning, professor. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good to be with you again, Tommy.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your time. Boy, you want to take us back to what happened with the fight before the holidays with the government shutdown and some of the stuff that was going on with Elon Musk and Twitter?
Well, as we many of your listeners probably know, Elon Musk, the entrepreneur and one of the most famous a businessman in the world, household name, has now been elevated to the central core of the federal government. He's going to be running this DOGE office, this new Department of Government Efficiency. Of course, many of your listeners know he is the, I wouldn't say new owner of Twitter anymore, Twitter now X, and has really come to dominate a lot of these conversations in American politics, has actually been able to use his, essentially, his army of followers on X, the platform that he owns, to kind of pick up their pitchforks and dominate a conversation. And this actually spilled out into real life in Capitol Hill, where he was able to use all these minions, essentially, to exert control over a spending bill and that potentially opened the door to a government shutdown several weeks ago. What is concerning to folks like myself and perhaps other people in the news industry and journalists is that there can be some false information that gets out there in these kinds of Twitter storms. And it can drown out the ability of fact-based, nonpartisan journalistic reporting to kind of help us all understand the truth of the matter.
So here's the thing. A longtime politician told me a long time ago that there are leaders, some leaders who call themselves, some people who call themselves leaders, see which way the crowd is going, then they head in front and they call themselves the leaders. Other people really are leaders and decide which is the right way to go and then try to lead the crowd that way. When you have people that are contacting their representatives and senators in Washington based on false claims about spending bills, things like a NFL stadium in D.C. that proved to be false, it actually prevented that. Musk said the original bill funded a bioweapons lab, rather. It did not. Something about $60 billion for Ukraine, which it didn't appear to. Again, these bills are very complicated issues and very complicated matters, and there's also context and subcontext, and this leads to that, leads to that. It's not simple. At some point, the elected people have to say, okay, that's fine. You can vote for me, you cannot vote for me, but I know what's true and what's not, right?
Well, in theory, and to be sure, there are plenty of leaders who have integrity and the essential traits of leadership who are on Capitol Hill who know that their job is to take tough votes on bills. And we've got them on both sides of the aisle, mm-hmm. Tommy. But the fact is, I mean, it's human nature, right? If you are getting a pressure campaign on social media, and if you're a lawmaker who spends a lot of time on social media, I think it'd be naive to say that that stuff doesn't have some kind of an effect. Now, that's not to say that there should not be the channels or the ability for the vox populi, right, for citizens to make their voices heard. That's certainly not what I'm saying. However, if you're a lawmaker who is only listening to what's happening on social media, and if there happens to be a really loud and misinformed sort of cantankerous mob on social media, and that's influencing, chiefly influencing your votes, then I'd say that that's reason for concern for our civics.
And I'm all for a vox populi, so long as it's an educated electorate and they know what's true and what's not, and urging their representatives to act or senators to act on what's true and what's not, as opposed to misinformation or, in some cases, disinformation, right?
Right, exactly. And I think the experts would argue that the difference between mis and disinformation is, you know, with the former, it's sort of normal that in the course of things, there would be some mistakes that get out there, sort of misinterpretations in good faith of what's in a bill. As you said, these bills can be very complicated and messy. And, you know, any news reporter will know that the basic facts of the matter are actually a lot harder to pin down in many cases than we tend to think. Disinformation, on the other hand, is often characterized as a sort of willful manipulation of the facts for self-interested purposes by the actor.
On New Year's Day, I wasn't feeling great, and I was watching a little bit of the Twilight Zone in between the coverage of the Bourbon Street attack, Twilight Zone Marathon, and I caught the episode where they thought Martians were landing, and then one rumor led to the other, and then everybody freaks out. That was made in the 50s, I think, or the 60s. And I got to thinking about the parallel between that and what's going on social media, where people get all revved up over something that's not even true to begin with. I see a parallel here with the Seattle windshield thing that goes back to the 50s. So when we come back, we'll talk about the difference between media and reporters. And how, while it's true that everybody is perhaps the media because they go on social media and post, that doesn't make them reporters. And also about how do you discern what's true or not when it comes to making an informed choice and being an educated member of the public. We're talking with our friend about what's real, what's not when it comes to news, Jesse Holcomb, a professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University, former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center. 621 traffic now, WWL. 625 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jesse Holcomb, professor of journalism and communications at Calvin University, former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center, about how do you sort out what's real and what's not online, and who do you trust to give you unbiased news. And Professor, going back to my Twilight Zone example of Maple Street, I think the Martians invade Maple Street. Come to find out, there were actually, with this Twilight Zone episode, Martians behind it, but they were making people freak out by blinking the lights here or turning that off there, which is kind of akin to what happens on social media with trolls and people putting out misinformation or disinformation. So with all that being said, what advice would you give people to I guess, discern what's true and what's not? And I guess the first thing you'd be willing to do is challenge yourself and what you believe, maybe?
Exactly. I think that's right. I once read a quote that kind of stuck with me when it comes to this, which is that we should be curious when we're furious. Okay, so if you're on social media
say that again. That's a great phrase. Say it again.
Be curious when you're furious. And here's what I mean by that. If you're on social media, or forget that for that matter, watching cable news, and you see something or read something that just gets you hopping mad about politics, about the world these days, about some other group of people or political party, take a pause and take a breath and think to yourself, why am I so mad? Okay? Because the chances are, there's a chance in that kind of situation that you're mad by design. The fact is, Tommy, these social media platforms, and it's not necessarily something nefarious, but they are engineered to keep and hold your attention. Mm-hmm. And one thing we know is that anger, what psychologists would call that kind of arousal, will keep people engaged. Now, it's not necessarily good for us, okay? Sometimes when we get really mad about something, it can blind us to the facts and whether there's something, right? It can fit a preconceived narrative that we have. And so we're going to pay less attention to whether something is entirely true or not. And chances are, if it's making us really mad, maybe it's only presenting one side of the story. Okay. By contrast, I would argue that the thousands of community and local journalists and even national reporters around the country, they're not perfect, but they are trained and incentivized to try to do the best they can to present the clearest version of the truth as we know it about a certain topic or otherwise. They're out there interviewing real people. They're doing real research. They're eyewitnessing events. And, you know, despite their mistakes, sometimes they're incentivized to get it right because they're going to hear about it if they don't.
I had a conversation the other day with a local official about the way something was being reported in the national media as it related to the Bourbon Street attack, and it wasn't accurate. And I just asked people to, you know, consider that when they know maybe something that happened, and it's not necessarily of a nefarious nature, but and Professor, this goes to my, you know, I say the news sometimes should be 15 minutes, sometimes should be 90 minutes. It depends on what's happening, right? Because I think what happens is sometimes you get short shrift paid to things that should be gone into in detail, and then other things become news when they really aren't because you got to fill 30 minutes. And it just seems to me that when it comes to even mainstream media, people need to just remember things that happen locally and remember with limitations when it comes to, I guess, reporting and absolute truth. I guess it goes back to what you said. Be curious and do some digging on your own, right?
Exactly. And thank a local journalist.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Jesse Holcomb, professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University. Also a former associate research director of research at the Pew Center. Somebody texted in and said, I remember it'd be interesting to go back and look at all of the news reports, top stories in the past, see what was true. For instance, in the 1990s, all the networks said Miami would be underwater by 2012 due to global warming. Well, that's a fun remembrance, and that's nice to say, but I think maybe somehow it's like the old sitcoms where, you know, it gets all blurry, and well, that's not quite the way I remember it, and I texted back. I'd love to see stories on it. If you got some stories from major media outlets saying Miami was going to be underwater by 2012, I'd like to see them, but I don't really recall that. 6:30, time for WWL First News. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Tuesday, January 14th. Hard to believe it's already 2 weeks into the new year. It seems like just 2 weeks ago was January 1st. Barry Klein joins us now, LSU climatologist. Talk about the weather, El Nino, La Nina. How you doing, Barry?
I'm doing great.
Barry, let's talk about the fires in Los Angeles, if we can, please, and the conditions that led to them. I don't know if you, I guess that's kind of within your purview a little bit.
Absolutely, sure.
Because they had a tenth of an inch of rain, I think, since March 1st, and I don't think people quite understand. And you know, politics got involved in some of this, and I'm trying to limit this to the science of it. But talk about the conditions that just led to these wildfires in LA.
Yeah, so we've been drifting towards La Nina for some time, and that's affecting our weather too, but it's also affecting the weather in California. Now, California is normally dry in the summer anyway, so that's pretty typical, but normally they get most of their rains in the winter. But when we're in a La Nina, the jet stream tends to deflect further northward. It makes Northern California wetter than normal in falls and winters. But it makes Southern California drier than normal because that storm track, it's, you know, pushed up into Northern California and up in the Pacific Northwest, and it leaves Southern California high and dry. So, like I said, it's normal for them to be dry through the summer, but normally they get their rains in the fall and winter, and it just hasn't happened this year. And as a result, you get those Santa Ana winds, you know, this high pressure that sits up over what we call the Great Basin, and it pushes these, northeasterly winds down onto Los Angeles, and they move downslope. And when they move downslope, they get warmer than normal, and so you get these high winds. It's hot. way hotter than it should be. And all that vegetation out there hasn't seen any rainfall in many, many, many months. And it's just tinder, just ready to go. And once you get those fires going and with all that wind happening, it is very, very hard to get it under control. So, and that's what we see playing out over there. It's just really difficult to manage. And I don't see any relief, no short-term relief in sight right now.
And I heard during the football game last night, they were talking about Southern California, and I get that. But Northern California has also had their problems with wildfires, right?
It kind of reaches up to about San Francisco. And as you get, north of San Francisco and up into the northern part of California, there aren't nearly as many people up there. But it's actually been wetter than normal up in that neck of the woods. So,
but I guess I'm saying it depends on El Nino and La Nina, whether it's Northern or Southern California that has the fire risk.
Yeah, well, in this case, with La Nina conditions, it's been wetter than normal up in Northern California, but the South is what's really getting plagued right now with all this.
So when it comes to us and hurricane season and La Nina, El Nino, I always get them confused. A quick refresher on these?
Yeah, so the whole ENSO cycle plays a big role in our tropical weather. So El Ninos are good for us. It creates hostile weather conditions over the breeding grounds in the Atlantic Ocean. Now, keep in mind, the El Nino, La Nina originates in the Pacific, but it affects the weather patterns really all over the globe, and it does affect what's happening in the Atlantic. And so when we're in El Nino, we get, lots of wind shear, and that tends to limit the number of storms we get and helps reduce their intensity. But when we're in a La Nina, the opposite effect takes place. We have very conducive conditions for storms to form, very favorable upper air, very little wind shear, and we tend to get more storms than normal. So we were thinking, as we were going into this hurricane season, that this La Nina was going to develop at the back end of the hurricane season.
Wait, hang on. When you say going into this hurricane season, you mean the one coming up?
Last year.
Last year.
I mean last hurricane season, yeah. So we kept waiting for it to happen, and it just never did. And as a result, this season was not the record-breaking season that we were anticipating. But it just so happens that this La Nina just took a long time to form, and NOAA just officially declared us to be in a La Nina now. So, by the grace of God, we missed that during the hurricane season, which is a good thing for us.
So let me take a break. We'll sort it out when we come back. One thing I did, and hopefully this will help me remember, I took some notes, Barry. El Nino has an O in it, so that means it's good for us. La Nina has an A in it, so that means it's bad for us. That's my mnemonic device, and that's what I'm going to use to remember from now on. Let's see if it works. Barry Keim,
man, I love it.
Barry Keim is our guest, LSU climatologist. We'll continue the conversation. We come back. Again, any questions, 504-260-1870. One of them pops up. I thought La Nina meant we wouldn't have a good winter. I don't know what a good winter is, but you can text me back and let me know what that means. 10 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:56, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker with our friend Barry Keim, LSU climatologist. Barry, somebody texted in and clarified their text that they thought La Nina meant we wouldn't have a cold winter. And apparently we do have some cold weather coming in. We'll get to that in a second. But what role does that have to play? Where do we stand now with La Nina, with the winter, and with the upcoming hurricane season?
Okay, so in terms of where we stand right now for this winter, now keep in mind, this is a very weak La Nina, and it's going to be fleeting, but it will persist through the winter. It'll probably fizzle out this spring, so it's not going to be a long-lived La Nina.
Which is good for us for hurricane season, right?
It's good for us for hurricane season, yes. But as far as this winter goes, what La Ninas tend to do is create drier and warmer than normal conditions across the Gulf South, and obviously including Louisiana. Now, I mean, if you look back to December, we were absolutely warmer than normal. We were running about three degrees above normal, but we were wetter than normal. And keep in mind, the La Nina hadn't officially kicked in, and it's weak, so you don't get the signature isn't as predictable as you might expect. So far this January, as you well know, it's been pretty damn cold and miserable. So this is not your typical La Nina conditions across this area. Like I said, the jet stream tends to get deflected northward, that tends to leave us, you know, with a lot of Gulf air coming up into Louisiana, but without the mechanisms to produce rainfall. So we tend to be drier and warmer through the winter in La Nina. And of course, in El Nino, it's the opposite. We tend to be cooler and wetter. So personally, I like the warmer and drier. I like La Nina winters, but I certainly don't like La Nina hurricane seasons because that tends to throw more storms at us.
Let's talk about the cold weather that's coming and what's happening with that and what does it portend for the rest of the winter, or does it portend anything?
Well, again, it's a weaker than normal La Nina. I mean, I would anticipate, you know, once we get out of this real cold air that's going to descend upon us over the next week, then when we add the numbers up at the end of the season, it's likely we'll be warmer than normal and we'll probably be drier than normal. But, you know, only time will tell. Because like I said, with a weak La Nina, it's really anybody's guess. But that's what I would expect to see for the rest of the season. But having said that, going into the rest of this week, we do have a little coastal system that's going to spin up. That's going to bring us some rain Friday and into Saturday. And then a cold front's going to sweep through Saturday night, and it's going to usher in some pretty chilly air. It'll start moving in on Sunday. You'll feel the difference. But by Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week, we're going to have some pretty darn cold air descending upon South Louisiana. And expect a freeze, probably a light freeze. Some of the models actually have us getting down into the mid-20s, but I don't think many of the forecasters are really buying into that right now. But it's going to be damn cold, probably, you know, lows around 30, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, with high temperatures, low 40s. It's going to be pretty darn cold, so just brace yourself.
And to be clear, we morphed from climate into weather there, just for those following at home. Real quick, Barry, can you tell anything else about more polar weather coming, or is it just too early to predict any of that?
Yeah, it's too early. Obviously, we have some polar weather coming over the next week to 10 days, but after that, it's anybody's guess.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time as always. And I didn't want to draw that distinction between climate and weather because they are two different things. We're going to take a break. We come back, we'll talk to Jacques Thibodeau, Director of the Governor's Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness, about the governor's plan to open a transitional center for homeless people on France Road, I think it is. Then we'll talk to Steve Geller, and after that, we'll talk to Leslie Harris, get her take on the homeless.